Thank you for inviting me to speak to the branch. This is a particularly good time to be speaking to the branch because we are right on the brink of this exciting new Digital State Archives project. And I do want there to be a lot of communication between us in the project and State Records and the profession by these and a whole lot of other means right throughout. So thank you. I did make the mistake of thinking about this in the shower this morning and realising that the talk that I had thought I was going to present to you was actually not appropriate for this audience, and so I scrapped that and started a new one today. So if it's a bit... Well, it was... The one that I had originally thought I would use was a little bit of the sort of technology obsolescence was the problem. Here are some of the reasons why. I think most of you, having had a lot of professional development and conferences, etc., kind of understand that. And so what I hope this will do will give you a bit more of an understanding of a particular archives organisation and their struggle to get to where we are now and also what we envisage doing with the project over the next 3 years. So this is what I propose to cover, a little bit about the future-proof strategy, which is the context for the Digital Archives Project. The Digital Archives Project is a project within future-proof, which is the broader strategy that State Records has for digital records. What our Digital State Archives proposal was when we set out on this journey 8 or so years ago, and also a little bit about how it's evolved. The strategies that we employed, both formal and informal, to try to get the necessary resourcing to actually start on the project. A vision for the Digital Archives Project, I think probably the way I ended up kind of putting this together is looking at what are the opportunities that are around us now as opposed to when we first put together this proposal, and what can we really take advantage of and use to make this an exciting and very much 2011 and onwards digital archives rather than a 2003 digital archives, which is what we first put together. And some of the nuts and bolts about what we'll actually be doing with people and resources and so on. And yes, as I said, what's happening around us now that we really need to tap into. So the future-proof strategy was established in 2007 when I moved into the digital records role, and it came out of a number of factors. One, this hideous thing which called the review by the Council on the Cost and Quality of Government of State Records, which sounds horrendous. It was kind of horrendous, but it was at the behest of our then director, David Roberts, who had really been struggling with government for some time to get them to acknowledge that, well, things have changed. We're no longer able to deliver the kind of service to the government and to the people of New South Wales that we need to in the digital environment with the resource levels that we currently have. And so, you know, his strategy was to say, well, okay, come and have a review about our functions and about our resourcing and really examine whether they're fit for purpose. So that process took place, and in 2006 the report came down to say, well, actually, yes, you do need to improve your capacity to deal with digital records, and you do need to implement a digital state archives, essentially. Of course, the fine print said, subject to a satisfactory business case. It wasn't a check in the mail at that time. But anyway, I'm jumping ahead a little bit. So what we thought was a necessary foundation was to set out and to draw attention to what our strategy was, what the principles were underpinning how we regarded digital records, standards and other guidance and tools. And so we created this strategy. It has two main goals. One is to improve digital record keeping out there in government, and the other is to provide state records with the ability to accept, preserve and make available digital state archives. This is the blog, so if any of you haven't visited it, I'll encourage you to do so. We post regularly. In fact, Kate Cumming posted an excellent posting today about taxonomies, but she, because this is the kind of stuff that Kate reads, which is great. It was a book about taxonomies in natural history and the impact of Charles Darwin and his work on how people classified and regarded species and different organisms. And the title of the blog posting is something like Taxonomies, Classification and Fish, because... I'm not even going to try to explain it, but go and have a look. It's a great posting. And on this site, which is linked to the Safe Records main site, you will find regular postings on topics of interest, events, new advice from State Records, information about our plans for the Digital State Archives. That section is going to get a lot more exciting and regularly posted to now. Podcasts of events that we speak at, from the Records Managers Forum to other talks. So have a look. It's a good place to go. So the Future Proof strategy, as I said, has those two main goals. But to narrow down particularly on the proposal for the Digital State Archives, which predates the Future Proof strategy. In fact, as I said earlier, it first came out, or our proposal was first articulated in a business case in 2003. And then, as I said, 2006, we had that additional support by the Budget Committee of Cabinet decision, which had taken on board the cost and quality of government report. To then 2007, which is where the strategy came into light, and one of the first things we did with the Future Proof strategy was to say, okay, well, we've never actually publicly consulted on or expressed what our views are about appropriate ways to preserve digital records in the long term. So that was one of the first initiatives, was to do the research, look at what other archives were doing, consider our requirements in New South Wales, and really set out a number of principles expressing what we felt were important characteristics of any preservation activity on digital records, whether in a government agency or by us. So that policy statement had a number of principles. Digital records should be preserved in context. It made a fairly strong statement about using migration as a preservation strategy, so active management of digital records through technological change. And it also set out a principle about flexibility. So we recognised that, you know, we couldn't put out a policy saying we are going to convert everything into PDF and that will be great and that's it, end of story. Of course, A, that wouldn't suit quite a lot of digital records, and B, because this is all bound up with technology, we needed to ensure that we would have the flexibility to adopt new digital preservation approaches as they emerge. And so that was very much part of the philosophy as well, and also a commitment to an open source philosophy. So avoiding proprietary lock-in, vendor lock-in, closed formats where you don't understand the code. And these are some of the principles that I guess we picked up from what the National Archives set out in their foundation document, the name of which I've now forgotten. But when they set out their principles and philosophy around digital preservation. In case you're wondering, the first business case in 2003 didn't get invited to, what was the language? Something like Treasury did not invite us to submit it. That was the first of a long, long series of disappointments and knockbacks. I wasn't involved in that at that time. That business case was prepared by Richard Gore and Michael Allen from State Records. I think we tried to submit it in the following, lead up to the budget and had a similar lack of success up till 2006, when in desperation we went to that process of asking for the review. So the business case was revised in 2007. We had the original version from 2003. In 2007, when I came into the job, I revised the business case reasonably substantially, although there were some elements that carried on. And of course, we now had our policy statement around what our approach was, what our philosophy was. So I guess there is also, you have to follow a certain template in the state government with business cases and so on. There are some, you know, fairly sort of standard sections that you have to complete, many of which don't really work very well with this kind of proposal, so it was a bit of a struggle. But at the heart of it, you need to examine and present all the available options. In some cases, no matter how bizarre that option might be, that's what the people reviewing the business case are going to look for. So we did our research, we looked at the state of play here and overseas, and we came up with four options that we did all the costings for and the pros and cons. One was the base case, the do-nothing scenario, but we kind of tweaked it a little bit to our advantage in that we said, not only is this a do-nothing, but if we are to in any way fulfil our obligations to capture and preserve state archives on behalf of the South Wales Government, we are going to have to ask government agencies to print out all their digital records and send them to us, and that will require us to build many more new storage buildings than are currently forecast, not to mention all the extra processing and handling requirements within government agencies to do all of that. I mean, it's a ridiculous proposal, but it was a way to sort of indicate, you know, what might befall the state government if we didn't get this support. The other options were to, because there was a lot of interest from Treasury and other resource allocators about, well, why can't you just send them all to an existing digital archive, for example, in Victoria or in Canberra. So we had to put forward a proposal. One was that we establish a kind of a processing, a sort of portal by which we did certain activities here, but that we actually stored and used the preservation technologies and solutions in either Melbourne or Canberra. It wasn't our preferred option. We're still a bit of a custodial mindset here, I'm afraid, and I mean that's probably another conversation that we need to be having, but we did cost it out and sort of say, well, the costs would be possibly reasonable, but here are some of the risks and the problems associated with that, and there's also some legal problems with our Act, etc., so we were able to and not to mention the legal environments in Victoria and the ACT, not so much about the ACT, they're pretty similar to us, but so we were able to make those options look fairly unappealing, making our fourth option, which was to develop our own infrastructure and storage and processing in our own premises, and to loosely follow the model adopted in the Commonwealth as far as using normalisation tools such as Xena. So we had to do all that horrible cost-benefit analysis stuff, and fortunately I had a consultant who could understand the enormous spreadsheets that, you know, were required and fill all of those in. And with archives, as you would know, the vast majority of benefits are pretty intangible. And so we were sort of scratching around. We did have the you know, avoid all that paper scenario that was quite handy. We also gathered up a lot of information about different government agencies with large quantities of long-term or permanent value digital records having to set up their own repositories. And what might the costs be across government if you say, you know, X number of agencies set up their own digital repositories. And that was useful. So that was the business case as it was from 2007 on. There were some changes which I think I'll touch on, but having with the business case we had it, but then it was a case of basically taking it through all the processes, and I've not only underlined but bolded the word many there, because I literally lost count of how many Director General's briefings, Cabinet minutes, these awful things called maintenance of effort proposals or enhancement of effort proposals to Treasury, and so on, that we had to develop. And a lot of them had these incredibly repetitive sort of covering documents and, you know, you had no guarantee that they were going to have any effect at all. But it was very time consuming, but we did all of that. All of them were unsuccessful. And over the course of it, we would get advice from people in our parent department or people in Treasury saying, well, it might be better considered if you think about this option for funding it. So we went through from what was the budget committee of Cabinet had said, which was, you should sell some land at Kingswood and fund it that way. That we weren't so keen on. I mean, it's just, I mean, apart from anything else, being at the whims of the property market, and there was sort of no guarantees around the zoning of the land and whether there'd be a buyer, it was just a stupid idea. Then there was a person in our parent department who said, we could give you a grant. We'd just get a grant from our capital funds, and there you go. And we were super excited about that. And then somebody else came and said, no, you can't do that because State Records is an off-budget agency. They're not on the same, you know, system as us. So that was gone. Had a very interesting meeting with some people from Service First, who is a shared services organisation across government, who said, this is going to be great. You set up your project and you get all your money back by charging agencies to store their records with you. So we had to sort of slowly and carefully explain to them the role of archives in a democratic society and that this was not really a suitable option. Or simply Treasury making an allocation to us in the annual budget. Quite difficult to do, and one of the reasons that, because that seemed to be the last option we had, we also made changes to what amount of money we were seeking, and we also had to take out the recurrent component because there was no way Treasury was going to fund something that had a recurrent funding component that just went on and on and on with no end. They would maybe fund something that was a three-year project with they knew what they were getting into. So that's unfortunate because, of course, you know, it's not going to end at the end of 3 years. And certainly we want to keep staff, we want to keep the systems running, we want to have that ongoing support for what we're doing. But that's a battle that we're going to be fighting over the next 3 years. So we'll keep you posted. And then we also had advice late last year after a few sort of strategically placed comments in meetings and interpretations of our Act by the Crown Solicitor that the Auditor General did complete a report and issue it saying that we were technically in breach of our own Act by not having this facility. I think that was actually one of the significant tipping points to the government, as was you know, they don't like adverse Auditor General's reports that get put into the media. So that was quite a handy thing. But of course, all of that sort of stuff, which is fairly formal, you know, procedural stuff, had to be complemented by the sort of rearguard action and informal strategies. So gathering up information from agencies that we deal with all the time about specific classes of records that were at risk, and talking to senior people in the government about those and trying to sort of strike fear into their hearts. Commissions of inquiry, the Thredbo Commission, the Royal Commission, the various rail disasters, significant infrastructure records, records that would be necessary to protect landmarks in a security sense, just trying to tap into any of those fear factor sort of issues. And a lot of the agencies that we deal with all the time were fantastic and actually took the time to sit down and write kind of testimonials for us about the importance of this initiative, which we appended to various cabinet minutes and things. In 2008, we saw an opportunity to kind of tap into the interest across government in Gov 2.0, for want of a better word, the real interest in engagement on the web with various tools from, you know, online community consultation forums to social media. And I spoke at an event at Parliament House called the New South Wales Public Sphere, which was all about that sort of stuff. And the member of the upper house who organised it, Penny Sharp, was a fantastic supporter, and she was horrified after my talk when I had laid out the risks to government and the problems with not having this capacity to preserve our digital records, and wrote to the treasurer and spoke to people, and is still a supporter, and we're still in touch with her. Unfortunately, she is one of the sort of three members of the Labor Party still in Parliament, but she's hanging in there. She got voted in, so that's good. More recently, we tapped into the fact that shared service initiatives are super popular politically, that, you know, if we could market ourselves as the ultimate shared service across government for long-term digital records, that this would sound attractive. So getting away from using our language and just using their weasel words was a useful strategy. Alan Fentress organised a letter-writing campaign with all of his buddies in the various, you know, particularly the Royal Australian Historical Society and History Council and so on. He even got his local member in Manly to write a letter to the Premier, I think. But, you know, lots of letters going to our Minister or to the Premier. The only problem with that was, as with ministerials, they go down to the agency responsible who has to prepare a response. So I would be the one writing back and saying, yes, the minister shares your concern about, you know, the preservation of digital records, and basically sort of give a yes, thank you, but we're not sort of doing anything at present type response. So that was a bit soul destroying. And then, of course, we all, I gave a lot of presentations and wrote a lot of articles, not only in archives sort of literature, but more broadly in the history and genealogical and technology press. And then the last thing was just making friends with people that had some power to influence the decisions. So making friends with people in our parent department, some of whom did prove to be invaluable in ultimately reaching our success. And in fact, I can't believe I haven't even got a dot point to say how we got the money. So we got the money through a special pool of funds that was called the Treasury ICT Reinvestment Fund, that was advertised across government sort of halfway through last year, that sought proposals that were whole of government in nature and that had something to do with ICT. They said, we've got a bunch of money, we need to spend it, this is the former government, and your proposal must be whole of government in nature and have something to do with ICT. And we were like, that's us. So that was the proposal we put forward. And the amount that we were asking for, it's just infinitesimal. I mean, as you can see, we're asking for $3.62 million. In government terms, that's the sort of spare change that large agencies have sloshing around in their sort of capital funds. So we got the funds through that initiative, and the Treasurer wrote to us in February to advise. And in fact, we actually have the money in the bank, which was always the real test, actually having that cash. So the project is 3 years, and it is envisaged that it's a 3-year development with full operation, normal business as usual from year four. The funding provides for, as well as for, you know, infrastructure, fit out, consultancy, and other bits and bobs, it provides for a 6-person team. Myself as project manager, 2 archivists, 2 programmers, and a systems administrator. We'll be based at Western Sydney, where the fit-out is currently happening. And as I said, the whole approach is still based on that policy that we issued in 2007. Although I think, you know, as the project kind of gets going and we go back to looking at requirements and just making sure we fundamentally are happy with the way we're going, that policy may need tweaking, I'm not sure, but the basics are there. And we'll be adopting the best and most appropriate tools from Australia and internationally. Xena is certainly a tool that we still want to make use of, but there are a lot more than there were in 2007-2003 out there, and I'll touch on that in just a minute. And the idea is that we will take limited, if you like, pilot transfers. I mean, these will be real archives, but that we will be a bit selective and we'll try to manage the process, so that we can test out our systems and processes on different types of records, hybrid transfers. There's a lot of hybrid file systems out there, as we know, paper and digital, you know, different volumes, different complexities and so on. And different types of agencies, so councils, big agencies, small agencies. So this will be a big and challenging project on many levels. Some of the things that I've just been thinking about recently, archival description. State Records' current implementation of the series system is not a particularly comfortable fit with the way digital record keeping happens in many agencies. And this is something we discovered when we did a little sort of pilot research project with some pretend queries that from our own, pretend records from our own systems about a year and a half ago, and found that the kind of information, the kind of metadata about records that we were capturing as part of our standard transfer process was pretty minimal, was very much tied into item and file type paradigms, and was missing out on a lot of really rich and important metadata that we could be capturing and using to describe, to use, to contextualise records. And we're not alone in facing this issue. I've had the chance over the last few weeks to talk to a lot of people working in other archives with this stuff. Evelyn Wareham was here last week from New Zealand. Rowena Liu came down from Queensland. Graham Hairsline came up from Prov. It's just been a parade of digital archivists here recently. And we're all agreeing, well, yeah, actually, we need to sit down and have a pretty fundamental think about some of the more conceptual side of how we describe archives in this space. Access is going to be, I want it to be a really high priority for this project. Some digital archives projects have been all about the ingest and preservation and not so much about the access. And that's often for very understandable reasons of funding and resourcing and all of that sort of thing. But we have records that are going to be open immediately. They're already open. And so we need to make that a big part of our project. And also from the point of view of not just public access, but also how can we assist agencies that perhaps want to have pretty much instantaneous access to their records, even though they've physically transferred them. I mean, it seems odd with digital records saying, oh, I'm going to give them to you now and they're over there. I mean, they're digital, they're everywhere. But if we want to say this is the authoritative record, this is what has been preserved in the state archives, but the agency still needs to have access to that record, how can we facilitate that? While maintaining all the appropriate security standards. And another challenge will be just getting around some of the paper mindsets that we all have, that I often fall into the trap of saying, oh, well, this is how transfer works. First you fill in this form and then you, you know, have to arrange for delivery and you have to do this. I mean, it's a bad example, but it's an opportunity to take a step back and actually say, well, why do we do that particular process in the paper world and is it applicable for digital records? And so that's across state records, not just in the project team. And so we have a big part of the project is encouraging professional development, having talks. We're having our Digital Awareness Month next month across state records, or DAM, as we call it, which is quite fun for the, you know, we have the little, you know, newsletter that we send out throughout the month. It's called Another DAM Newsletter, which is hilarious, I think. Anyway, another challenge, and I'm sure that, for example, Brendan would agree with this, is encouraging transfer, actually getting agencies to engage with you and sort of say, yes, I have some digital records that to be transferred as archives. And, yeah, as I already mentioned, the problem of recurrent funding from Year 4 will be something on our minds. But there are lots of really exciting opportunities for us starting out at this particular point in time. And as I said, I've been meeting with a lot of our colleagues from other ADRI institutions. And if you don't know, ADRI is the Australasian Digital Record Keeping Initiative, and it's all the government the Commonwealth, State, Territory archives from Australia and also Archives New Zealand. And We have been sharing information and working collaboratively on projects since 2004, but we're now at a point where at least four of us are either going back and doing a pretty fundamental review of our existing digital archive in a case of PROV, or are doing a new project. So there's us, there's Archives New Zealand. QSA is putting a lot of resources into their digital archive strategy now with Adrian Cunningham up there. And we just are very keen to make sure we pull our resources, address some of these problems. You know, the descriptive standards issue, how you deal with digital records within the SERI system, for example, is an obvious project that we should all work together on. And it's also a good time because there's, as I said before, there's been a lot more developments in terms of digital preservation tools and processes. So, you know, the preservation approach of emulation, which in mid-2000s was just a bit of a sort of novelty used for gaming so that you can reconstitute Frogger and play it like you're in an arcade in 1982. But it's really getting a lot of use in, particularly in the Netherlands, and there's more implementations that are relevant to archives. And you know, other new tools like the Planets Initiative in Europe and their Plato tool, which is all about setting out a preservation pathway for a particular set of records based on looking at them, their requirements, your own capacity to you know, apply different techniques. And there's also a whole lot of things happening in the online space that has a lot of promise for making archives more appropriate, usable and powerful in an online world, and I'll touch on that in a minute. We've also got the benefit of lessons learned in terms of... Okay, music. Because this is sort of second generation digital archives initiatives, there are some things that haven't gone so well that we can look at and learn from. One of which is, I hate to say, but this is sort of out there in the public, is what the National Archives and Records Administration in the US has done with their Electronic Records Archives initiative, which was funded to the tune of some ridiculous amount of money, you know, sort of. Well, in the end, it's going to cost... I actually printed out a story, and it's on the next slide. This was just a recent story about ERA. But it sort of quoted Lockheed Martin, because they engaged Lockheed Martin to do the development and delivery of their electronic records archives. And they say in this piece that between 60 and 70% of the 850 requirements in the 2003 requirements document have not been met. And there's been delays, cost overruns, some mismanagement, so that they are at least 67 months behind schedule. And the total life cycle cost of the program could be at least $1.2 billion. I mean, that's unbelievable. That's crazy. But it's, I think, from sort of discussions with colleagues overseas and so on, I think one of the problems one of the things that they did wrong was the consultants who weren't archivists and didn't really understand what it was all about took everything that the archivists working in NARA said to them and put them into the requirements. So they'd sort of say, well, we're going to do this, and then an archivist over here says, oh, but our transfer form has this on it, we've got to have that. And someone over here would say, oh, but we need this element put into it. And it just became this massive grab bag of requirements that didn't, I suspect, get back to, well, fundamentally, what are we doing with these archives? And let's throw out our existing processes for now and actually get back to that, to basics. So, you know, people in project management call that scope creep, and I think they ended up trying to do everything plus the kitchen sink, because I understand that it was also about, you know, disposal scheduling and access and, you know, all these sorts of things. So I think the lessons that I drew from that were, you know, keep it simple, do things in an incremental sense, in an iterative sense, checking back, and also, yeah, try to take that fundamental let's get back to basics approach. So hopefully we won't end up spending $1.2 billion. That's very unlikely. Other opportunities that we have, the open agenda, the fact that at least what the government is saying, and what the Office of the Information Commissioner is saying, and I saw her in the paper yesterday, which was great, raising a bit of hell, is that government should be proactively releasing certain information on their websites, from strategy and policy documents, and so on and so forth, and that there should be a sense of the public right to information, rather than, you know, the public having to go and drag information out of government agencies. And so we potentially have a role to play there. I had an inquiry the other day from Premier and Cabinet, who received a request from the public saying, Agency X put up their policy on blah, it's been superseded, and now I can't find it, and it's no longer available. And so if Agency X is really meaning to make available their policy about whatever it is, you can't just have the current one and forget about superseded versions. So what role could we play in preserving and making available some of that material through the digital state archives, both in terms of the preservation and the online access? And similarly, the State Library of New South Wales has had the responsibility for collecting electronic publications of government, but they don't have any digital preservation capacity, which they very freely acknowledge, and they're very keen to work with us. So that's a way that we can actually have really, you know, contemporary government information preserved and in context and taking advantage of our fantastic archival description to really place that in a context for users. And another exciting initiative is our open data project, which my colleague Richard Lehane, who is now a part of the digital archives team, has been working on. So that's putting our data out there on the web. It's a toe in the water at this point, very early days. But very exciting possibilities with having an API on our website that any user, whether they're a developer or just any personal individual, can use to gather up our data, use it, repurpose it, just do simple searches. And I think, you know, and one possible result of that is that we will have persistent URLs for digital archives that you can gather up using this API or this sort of tool, so that if you're in an agency or you're a member of the public, you can just save that persistent URL and you've got instant access to that digital archive whenever you need it. So exciting opportunities there, I think. That's the open data catalogue. Oh, it's a bit cut off, but anyway, it's good to go and look at it. If you don't know much about open data or linked data, it's a really clear and good explanation of what we're doing, why we're doing it, what the potential benefits are. So that's the URL. It's linked from our main site, but it's basically just replace the www with data. You'll find it. And that, finally, brings me to the end of my talk, and I guess if you have any questions or comments, they would be very welcome.